No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello, and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Tonight we're going to talk about what's been going on in Capitol Hill, especially to the District of Columbia. And we're also going to continue our conversation on the violence and the protests that have erupted across the country over the police killings in Missouri and New York and elsewhere, and over the decision by grand juries not to indict. We're going to continue to talk about how people are reacting to these incidents and the continuing unrest that seems to be spreading nationwide. So if you have a question or a comment, please let us hear from you. Before we start, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who I'm sure has all her Christmas shopping done. By the way, if you can't get that Ferrari in red, you can get me one in yellow. That is just fine with me. I'm not that picky.
I could only find green.
Green, I'll take it.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
All right, you got it.
Because okay. I'm a green guy. I'm kind of a green guy. I'm gonna be green for 2015. I'm gonna replace my carbon footprint. That's my.
Okay. Are you gonna be green and lean? That should be your motto: green and lean.
Green and lean. Yeah, the diets start January 1st. Me and everybody else in America, and then on January 3rd, I'll go back to my wicked ways. I'm sure. But I've got some really bad news for you because, you know, I'm directly connected to the North Pole as a United States Senator, and it seems that you have once again ended up on the naughty list for not being more respectful of the opinions of your co-host. Yeah, I asked.
You know what I think happened? Santa told me he's really upset with Congress and everybody who's associated with it and everyone inside the D.C. Beltway. So he's not giving you guys anything for Christmas.
Us fat guys have to stick together. So,
I see. But he's kind of like a jolly fat guy.
I'm jolly.
I forgot.
How are things in Arizona? What's the weather like?
Oh, man, it's really nice. I hate to say this. It's like in the 70s, but I'll tell you, it's strange. You know, when you're in weather where it's nice all the time, like 70s, and then it gets a little, you know, okay, we have the argument about how hot it gets in the summer. It makes you more lazy, I think, than it makes you like, yeah, you know, I'm going to get out in this great weather and ride my bike and all that. There's something about 75, 80 in the winter that just, you know, people don't dress up, they all in flip-flops, and they're all in shorts, and it's like it's hard to tell that it's Christmas, except that you got, you know, you hear the music in the on the parking lots, but it's something, I don't know, there's something to be said about seasons, you know, listening to Christmas music when there's that kind of brisk smell in the air, and you put on your coat, and you're getting warm, I shouldn't complain because I'm sure when I go back there, I'll be dying and remembering the days it was 70, 75, 78, you know?
Well, I've only had that experience once. You know, I've always been in cold weather Christmas, except one year I went to Hawaii. And I was in Hawaii. So it didn't matter what time of year it was. You know, it was just, I was just overwhelmed. It was the first time I ever went to Hawaii. So, it was an amazing time. But yeah, I can see that. I've always thought about that, what it must be like to live in Southern California or a place like Arizona where you don't get snow and you don't get the cool weather. You get snow up in the mountains though, right?
Right. There is snow up in the mountains and it gets cold at night. I mean, like, can drop to 30. There's a difference of 50 degrees. But I think sometimes in your mentality, the way your body reacts to it, is you get more lethargic than you get energetic. I think sometimes being in the cold weather rejuvenates you in a way. You know, or when the weather's good, you're ready to get out there when the weather's good. Here, it's usually nice all the time, and it's like, you get more lazy. That's just my theory, according to Gomez. There you go.
Well, let me tell you, don't try to use that as an excuse, because if my Ferrari's not under the tree on December 25th, I'm going to be pissed.
All right,
All right.
So I took notes.
All right, good. You know, first, let's talk about statehood. First, we have the good news is that we have three new co-sponsors of the new Columbia Edition Act. Right. Now that we're going to have to reintroduce it in a couple of weeks, people are starting to sign on. But a shout out and a thank you goes to Alma Adams, Representative Alma Adams, who's from the 12th District in North Carolina, and also Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who I actually saw on the 10th at a big DNC gathering. As you probably know, she's from the 23rd District in Florida, but she's also chairman of the Democratic National Committee, where Kathleen and I worked. And they dedicated the third floor of the DNC, Kathleen, to our old boss, Chuck Manatt.
Yes.
So I saw her on the 10th, and on the 11th, she signed on. You do the math. And also Jim Moran from the 8th District of Virginia, our neighbor. Can you guess what all three of them have in common, Kathleen?
They're all Democrats.
They're all Democrats. What a surprise. We now have 121 plus 133 co-sponsors, each one of them a Democrat, not one Republican. The Republican Party. Diego, are you out there listening? Those Republicans who are always talking about getting government off your back and letting people make their own decisions. Not one. We don't have one. So if my godson, Diego Vlasic, is out there listening, you need to get on a stick and start calling some of those Republicans you know. And say, get behind the new Columbia Admission Act. So that's the good news. We now have three new co-sponsors. But the bad news, and I'm sure that everybody out there has heard this, is that Congress passed a $1.1 trillion budget this week to keep the government open. And that's good news. But the bad news is that they added riders to the budget, which they do all the time, because crazy as it is, the District of Columbia budget is part of the federal budget. You know, there's only two budgets that Obama signs, the federal budget and the D.C. budget, because it's part of the federal budget. And they put riders on there that we tried to get off. And two of the most heinous are a series of them. But one of them prohibits us using local funds to fund abortions for low-income women. We're the only jurisdiction in America where this is true. And the other, and the one that we found most disturbing, was that the people of the District of Columbia in November voted overwhelmingly, 70%, to legalize marijuana, possession of marijuana in the District of Columbia. And they put a rider that will not allow us to use any of our money, any of the money in the budget, to create any new laws or change any existing laws on marijuana. And now it's up in the air as to whether our referendum is defeated essentially, by not being able to be implemented, or whether we can use some other, we can do some kind of tricky maneuvering to make this happen. But we shouldn't have to. I was in Senator Reid's office this week. I actually made it on the front page of the Washington Post, for those of you that are interested.
Hey, remember me, I'm your co-host. I was going to ask you some questions.
Okay. Ask me if I made it on the front page of the Washington Post.
I heard a rumor. I saw this guy. I was looking on the Washington Post, and I saw this guy in like an overcoat. Was that you on the front post of the paper on Thursday?
Well, it could have been me, or it could have been Brad Pitt. I'm not exactly sure, looking at the picture, which, yes, it was me. I was there coming out of Reid's office because we were pissed. We were upset that, you know, 70% of the people in the district passed this law, and now they're going to say it doesn't count.
Okay, well, let me ask you some questions for the audience out there, because I know you live in D.C. and you guys think everyone knows what goes on, and they don't. Okay, first question. When did you guys find out that this was going to happen, that you were going to, that it was, they were going to have a rider that would knock this law off the plate?
Well, you know, I think that we found out for sure on Tuesday, but we always suspected it. Because there's this guy from Maryland, Congressman Andy Harris, who has been doing, making maneuvers for several weeks to try to get something on the in the budget, to try to get the law. He actually proposed a bill in Congress to block the law. So we kind of felt it coming. We felt that it was going to be there, but we actually found out the bad news on Tuesday, and that's now, what started to spring into action.
Now, there was two other gentlemen with you. There was, I think, Adam Eidinger. Is that how you say his last name?
Yep, Adam Eidinger.
And the other gentleman was?
You know what? I'm terrible at names. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's a doctor from New England who has given up his practice temporarily, put it on hold, to come down here and fight for the referendum, Initiative 71, that we passed, because he said, you know, as he was doing some research, he found out that he's an African American, and he found out that even though white people and black people smoke pot at approximately the same rate, 8 times as many black people are arrested in the District of Columbia as white people.
Really? So he came down just for that because of those issues?
That's amazing. Yeah. He just said, so appalled by that statistic. He said, he told me that he got into medicine to make things better for African Americans. And he said, when he saw that, he said, well, I just can't let this be. I need to get involved somehow. So he's come down, and he's been part of the initiative. So, it was the three of us, and there were other activists there as well. And we finally got a meeting.
Now tell the audience who Adam Eidinger is.
Adam Eidinger is an activist, and he's part of this D.C. cannabis campaign. But he's an activist on many levels, and this was one thing that he was involved in. And Adam actually got the 60,000 signatures to get this on the ballot. He was the guy that put that together and coordinated all of it. So he worked very, very hard as an activist to get this done. And I can tell you, I'm really sad that we had to go through this, but we go into into the senator's office, Reid's office, and we wait for about, I don't know, I would say an hour and a half, 2 hours. Nobody meets with us. And finally, Eidinger has the nerve to stand up and put his back against the door so nobody can get in or out of the office. And
now, let me ask you something. Was some people in the office, and so he was blocking them from leaving and coming in?
Yeah. Wow. They have a side door, I think, or a back door that they can use. But certainly the front, the main entrance, people actually came and knocked on the door, and he said, I'm not moving. And they said, well, we're here to lobby. And he goes, great. Well, so are we, you know. Wow. So Yeah. He said, you're either going to arrest me or you're going to meet with us.
And explain to the audience, explain to the audience, because, and I never knew this, when you protest on the Capitol and you, and I guess he's been arrested six times for whatever issue, right?
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a list that you can only protest so many times and then they'll like throw you in the clinker? I mean, like,
well,
the DJ Joe?
I mean, I don't know that this is, you know, that this is a, like a formally established thing, but they've told him that he's been arrested six times, so he's considered habitual. And as a habitual, this is what they told him, as somebody that's been arrested, all in protest, of course, he's never done anything illegal. Mm-hmm. But because of that, they have him on a list, they've told him. And they told him that the next time he got arrested, that they would put him in jail and not allow him to forfeit. And forfeit allows you to pay a $100 fine and walk out the door. Okay. You don't have to stay in jail. But he could be remanded to custody in the D.C. city jail until his trial. And who knows how long a trial takes.
So he wouldn't be able to even have bail?
No, he wouldn't be able to make bail. So I think that's, you know, I think that's that, at least that's the impression they've given him. You know, whether that was an idle threat or whether it would actually happen, it gave him pause over whether he wanted to really do that or not. But in the end, he said, "There's an issue that's bigger than this, and I'm going to do it, and we'll see what happens." And it worked. He got them to meet with us, and you know, Adam and I were arrested together one time actually on Capitol Hill. One of his arrests was the one and only time that I've been arrested, and I went to trial, and that was for the same thing. It was for a rider that was the abortion rider. You know,
well, this is amazing to me that they would even classify anyone as a habitual protester. It's your right to protest as many times or as many issues that you want. I find it just appalling that they would even have a term that calling you a habitual protester. That's terrible. That's
well,
really,
you
that's
know,
really
that's what
shameful.
They taught us. That's what they taught us in school, right? That you had a right to do this. And
yes.
And yeah. And evidently you have a right to only do it so many times. You know, they try to make it difficult for you too. I mean, now the Capitol Hill police are great people. They don't, you know, the way they handle the situation up there, I find amazing. You know, they have a squad that does nothing else but arrest protesters. They really know what they're doing. I can't remember a time when anybody was hurt or, you know, where they were accused of mistreatment. They're really good at it, but they don't make it easy on you because,
right.
You know, they want you to understand that this is an inconvenience, that, you know, you're disrupting things. So they're a little slow.
But you know what? Now, this is my problem. And, you know, we saw this when we went up on the Hill in the Senate when they weren't going to let you speak. It's not about an inconvenience. It's we pay their salary. They are there because we voted them in. They're working there because we voted these people into Congress. Our tax dollars go to paying the congressional salaries of the congressional people, as well as their staff, as well as their rent, as well as security. And it's amazing to me how it gets into their head that, you know, the public, the citizens, the voters have become an inconvenience. You know, it just is. Everybody up there needs an injection of common sense and a wake up and smell the coffee, because you guys work for us out here. You guys in D.C. work for us. Now, I can't even say that about you because they don't even pay you. And in fact, let's talk about another issue that is in that bill where they actually have legislation that says no federal funds can be used to pay your salaries. Is that not correct?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I mean,
yes.
I just find that amazing, you know, that we've been singled out. You know, they haven't singled out other people, but they singled out us. We can't be paid because they don't want, with federal money, because they don't want any federal money. And actually, until a few years ago, it said we couldn't use any money at all, even our own money, to lobby or do anything for statehood. Now it just says that we can't use any federal money to lobby for statehood or to pay our salaries. So
now I had asked you a question, and you actually we had talked about this, that they actually gave Puerto Rico a chance in federal funds to have a referendum, or I guess what do they call them?
Yeah, they call it a plebiscite.
Okay. And they spent federal funds to find out if Puerto Rico wanted to become a state, right?
Yeah, over $1 million. Yeah, over $1 million. So, but they want Puerto Rico. You know, they want the tax money. They want the other stuff from Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico, it tends to be more Republican. It's really a partisan issue. Although I wouldn't call Puerto Rico solidly Republican. It's way more Republican than the District of Columbia. So, yeah, and that's really the bottom line on all this stuff, is when it becomes inconvenient. And it's funny that you know that we're using the word inconvenient, because that's really the crux of what's going on in the District of Columbia. It's inconvenient for them to make the District of Columbia state, because they get two more Democratic United States senators, and they feel like that'll happen in perpetuity. But there's a lot of inconvenient things about democracy. That's one of the.
This is where I think that, in a sense, you don't want to make promote this, but I truly believe that it won't become, for very long, it won't be a Democratic stronghold. When I went back there, I saw the people who were Democrats being pushed out of that city, because the rentals, the cost of living there is like living in New York City. A lot of my friends who used to live in New York City now have moved to Brooklyn. And I'm talking not even Brooklyn Heights or Park Place. It's like way, you know, way down, because they cannot afford. And I think that's what's going to become the reality. You're not going to have Democrats being able to afford to live in D.C. And in fact, when you look at D.C., there's so much rich people that they don't even care that how their taxes are being spent, because they pay taxes, high taxes, on their beautiful homes. I mean, there's so much wealth in D.C. that they don't even care what happens to it. They have so much money, it seems, because why would you not be concerned how your taxpayers were being spent, your taxpaying dollars being spent?
Well, you know, and this has always been the argument. It's always been the argument. It was the argument with Alaska and Hawaii. And we laugh about it a lot, because they used to say that Hawaii would never elect a Democrat and Alaska would never elect a Republican. And as we know, there's only one Democrat in Alaska, United States Senator Begich. And Hawaii has been electing Democrats forever. I mean, they're mostly Democrats. Right. So those things change over time anyway, but they've always been the argument. Partisan politics has always been part of it. And in Washington, I think it's a bigger part of it than it has been in other states. I think that other statehood battles, there's been less of an emphasis on the partisan nature of it. You know, and part of our problem in D.C. is that people outside D.C. don't understand that we have an indigenous population here. We're not all tax collectors, and we, you know, they don't like the government. And that's the funny thing. People out in in the country don't like the government, but those are the people you send us. They're not Washingtonians. Congress isn't Washington. Congress has one Washingtonian. Her name's Eleanor Holmes Norton. The rest of them all over the country, although they love her now.
And that is a really good point. Now, I want to go back toward talking about Adam Edinger and you three. You actually finally did get in the door, and you met with just a staffer. You didn't meet with a senator,
correct? Yeah, met with his chief of staff, right.
And what did the chief of staff, what did he say to you?
Well, you know, it's funny, because first of all, they're very noncommittal. You know that. They never say, right. No, absolutely not. We hate you. We're not going to help you. They're very noncommittal. And the guy kept on trying to, it's funny, he kept on trying to establish his street credentials with us because he kept on saying, well, I'm a Washingtonian. I live in Washington. You are my senator, he said to me. I live in Washington. And I voted for Initiative 71. And, of course, we kept on saying to him, well, that's great. Now let's make it a reality, you know. And basically, he told us that the big fear that Senator Reid had and that others had on the Democratic side of things was they didn't want to be blamed for shutting down the government. You remember the last time this happened.
Yes.
The Republicans were at the bottom of it, and they took a lot of grief for shutting down the government for several days. You know, there were all sorts of complications. Military people didn't get paid. Government workers were laid off temporarily. It was a hardship for a lot of people. Services couldn't get done. You know, we don't think about how inconvenient this is, but if you're trying to get a passport and go overseas, or you're trying to get something taken care of that the government's involved in, you can't do it for several days. People have to put their lives on hold. So it took a lot of criticism for it. And the big fear seemed to be that the Democrats didn't want to be blamed, so that they were willing to, take lots of compromises, in our opinion. They didn't see them, I don't think, as a lot of compromise, but they had to take some compromise, they felt, in order to get the budget passed so that we could avert a government shutdown. And in the end, you know, there was some maneuvering. The Senate passed a continuing resolution, what we call a CR, to keep the government going for an extra 2 days so they could have extra time to debate this. But in the end, they passed the bill. And they passed it with the riders. And
was there ever at one point of time where you really thought that they were going to fight for D.C. and not pass the budget? I mean, that was pretty much – D.C. is not a big enough issue for them to shut the government down or to say, no, we're not going to pass this budget until you take this out. So
right.
I guess that's what we all knew, right?
Right. Well, there was a time in the House where it thought that – where there was a thought that it might not pass. And I actually talked to Speaker Pelosi on the 10th, which was Wednesday, and she seemed to feel that it was headed in that direction. But it wasn't about D.C. It was about another amendment that allows the government now to go back and bail out Wall Street banks again.
That's right.
And also a contribution, a change in contribution limits. So it's funny that there seemed to be this kind of strange, especially in the Senate, this strange coalition developing. You know, they say that politics makes strange bedfellows. Well, in this case, it was our friend from New England, Elizabeth Warren, and Ted Cruz from Texas, who seemed to be putting together some resistance because of those two aspects of the budget. And there was some of the same feeling in the House. And there was a moment where we thought it might not pass, but not because anybody was concerned about D.C.
Well, let me ask you, just out of curiosity, those two things, were they increased? Wasn't the contribution is now like $3,000 and it was could go up to $32,000 or something like that?
Yeah, it was increased. You've got me on that one, Kathleen. I've been so focused on this other aspect. But yes, it was increased dramatically.
And that passed, correct?
Yeah, passed, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one where now you can go and bail out the big banks, but boy, nobody's bailing out the middle class guy or, you know, the person that isn't on the unemployment polls because they've been without a job. And, you know, there's only a certain amount of time they consider you unemployed. And then when you stop getting your unemployment check, well, you fall off the numbers, you know, and you're just the disappearing unemployed people in America, the middle class. So that is just atrocious to me. And, you know, the whole thing is just god-awful. But so now you guys came out of there, and on the expressions on the Washington Post, you can tell that you guys were not happy campers, that you were really, really upset, because they basically said, you know, sorry, we'll, you know, whatever. Now, what happened after that is it passed. Now, the guy that would put this in is Andy Harris from Maryland. And I remember I was reading the other day where his advice to people who didn't like that he was doing this in D.C. was like, well, why don't you go live somewhere else, right? Why don't you go live in those states that have that? I mean, who is this guy to come and this is a different area. It's not, you're not part of Maryland. So because he can, he did this, and people across the country should be really appalled, because this is like a dictator. This is like something you see in Russia or some other countries, not in the United States.
Well, and that's exactly what he said when they asked him. He said, we can do it here. That's why we're doing it here. And imagine saying to somebody who said, okay, I voted for Initiative 71 and I think it should stick, and the somebody saying to you, well, move to Colorado or Washington State. It's not even like you have to move to Maryland or Virginia right next door. He wants you to move all the way across the country if you don't like it. And
well,
I just,
but didn't Alaska just pass legalizing marijuana, and that's a Republican state.
Yes. Yes. And that is, therein lies the good news for us, is that they're, you know, we need to get outside the District of Columbia to make this happen. So the fact that this issue is becoming an issue that is nationwide, and that several states are changing their laws, and that we're connected to that through this issue, may bring some hope for us that our message gets out, because most Americans think that it's wrong to treat the District of Columbia the way it's treated. 80% of Americans in a nationwide survey said that they believe that we should have exactly the same rights as anybody else. So the more we get the message out, the better off we are. So this may be a vehicle for that in the long run. These guys may be shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, this is interesting, because I don't know, probably told you this, but about a week and a half ago, I am on the board of the University of Arizona's Cooperative Extension Board, which is basically the department that deals with agriculture and behavioral health. And so I went to Wilcox, which is, you know, a very agricultural, rural place to look at not only a ranch that I didn't know this, but when cattle is taken, you know, I thought somebody owns a piece of cattle and they take it to slaughter. Well, no, you send it to a place that feeds them to make them fat for 2 years. And then we went to another place to look at this, and it was actually where hot house tomatoes used to grow. And this guy was from Finland. He'd been in the United States doing this stuff in Wilcox for about 15 years. And he told us that investors from out of this country were paying him to build a greenhouse. They were giving him 12 species of marijuana plants to grow. And this is in Arizona, a very right wing. I mean, after this past election, it couldn't be any redder than ruby red, blood red. It's a red state. And it's okay to do that. Now, he said, you and I can't do that because you have to get loans from the federal banks. All the banks are owned by, even credit unions, by the federal government, and so it would be impossible to get a loan to do this, but outside investors were. So this is definitely something that is happening. I mean, if it can happen in Arizona, it can happen anywhere. So it amazes me that this guy, who's a Republican, is not being reined in by his Republican party.
Well, I don't think they see it, and I think you're exactly right. And you know, when we look at the Constitution, look, there's only one amendment to the Constitution. Now, there's only been really 17 amendments since the Bill of Rights. So there's only one circumstance in which there's been two amendments, and that's that's alcohol, right? We prohibited it, and then we had a constitutional amendment that overturned the prohibition. So this may be the same thing. It was a nationwide thing. I mean, prohibition politically, if you look at prohibition politically, it was really a bad thing for the people that were behind it. It was great. You know, I've seen some pictures of people on election day giving out free beer and stuff as soon as it was overturned. So, yeah, it may be their Achilles heel. Well, these now, are this, some. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, let me just ask you one more thing. Didn't this gentleman and didn't he write something in the paper in the Washington Post where he called it the devil? Or I mean, this is he believes that it's the devil's doing or the devil's instrument, marijuana.
Yeah, well, he wrote an op-ed today in the Washington Post with another guy, another person that I've never heard of, who I assume actually wrote the piece because I'm not sure that Andy Harris is particularly literate. But anyway, they wrote this article talking about all the bad things. I guess I shouldn't say that about Harris because he's a doctor. But he wrote about all the medical problems with marijuana. But that's really not our position. Our position is that this is our right to do this. And I'll tell you what, you could have written the same exact article and taken out the word marijuana and put in the word alcohol. So why isn't he trying to ban alcohol? Or you could have put in the word guns. You know, he said it's never been shown, and some of it I think is suspect, even though he's a doctor and I'm not. He said that that it's never been shown. There's no medical evidence that there's any good reason for marijuana. It has no medicinal usefulness, and I don't believe that. I think it does.
I've seen it happen, and you know the Indians used it, and you know, I mean, come on, get real. It's just ridiculous. So when we come back, let's talk about what you guys are going to do now with this, and what your plan is, and how you're going to get it together.
Okay, we will. And one of the things that we want to talk about tonight, briefly, we've gotten off on this. You know, tangent on this problem in the District of Columbia, which is a major problem for us, and really we really need to discuss it. But we also wanted to talk about what was going on with the marches across the country, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we get back. And I'm just explaining that because our song tonight and is dedicated to Kathleen Gomez, who loves this song, but it also I think expresses where the country is right now on some of these issues. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Here's Fireball by Pitbull.
Mr. Worldwide to infinity, you know the roof on fire. We go boogie, oogie, oogie, jiggle, wiggle, and dance like the roof on fire. We go drink drinks and take shots until we fall out like the roof on fire. Now, baby, get my booty naked, take off all your clothes and light the roof on fire. Tell him, baby, 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 I'm on fire. I tell her, baby, 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 I'm a fireball.
And we're back.
Now, you know what? I can envision us going down with that song. I could see us going down Constitution Avenue protesting, you know, we're on fire and we're not going to give up, because I really think that statehood has got to be going forward, because you guys, if you can't, you know, you have the right to self-determination, and I think this is the time. People got to get their fire going and you know, and bring it to the hill and make these people understand. And I think that's the thing too. America's got to feel the pain of what D.C. residents are going through.
Well, you know, this is a perfect segue to talk about what some of these protests, especially the one that I was involved in yesterday. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think we really want to head in that direction. You and I have talked about this, and this is certainly going to be our objective in the near future, is to keep this going and bring this fight to America and see if we can get people engaged on this issue so that they understand the bigger issue, which for us is self-determination. So you're absolutely right about that. The problem with that for us this is several fold. And one of them is, as you well know, we don't have the money to do this. The city council and the people in the District of Columbia that run things have not allocated funds to do this. But I must tell you, our friend Phil Mendelson, who's been standing in our way on getting funding, has really come out in front on this issue. So we'll see what happens. I have a meeting with him later in the month. But yeah, we'd like to keep that going. One of the problems that we have, though, and yesterday I was involved in a march that was put together by the National Action Network, run by Al Sharpton out of New York, over the protests, over the verdicts from the grand jury in the Michael Brown and Eric Garner cases. And I don't think we need to go into everybody pretty much knows that there's been a lot of action across the country in protests in every city, major cities across the country on this issue. And this is a problem we have in D.C., whereas people outside of Ferguson and outside of New York City and outside of California have felt the same types of, have seen the same types of things in their community, and they can relate to that. Nobody can really relate to the situation we have in D.C. because you have a right to self-determination in Arizona, in Iowa, in Nebraska.
And you can vote. And you can vote for representation.
And your vote means something. Here, right. Some guy walked up to me at the protest rally yesterday and said, you know, I'm sick of voting for stuff that doesn't mean anything. I'm sick of voting for things in the District of Columbia only to have them overturned, only to have my vote not count. And I think, you know, all of us would be sick of that, but only the people in Washington are really subjected to that. Yeah.
Right.
I
would just like people to think about that. You know, there, whatever issue you feel strong on, whether it's, you know, conservative or liberal, imagine working on the issue and fighting for it and voting for it and getting the vote out and whatever you worked on past, only to be told it doesn't matter because it doesn't count by Congress. I mean, if it was happening anywhere else, whether it be the country of Arkansas or the hills of Washington State, you would have an uproar of it. You know, and people
I just don't think
people understand that it happens, that it really is the case, that people vote in the district and it doesn't count. If Congress doesn't want it to, it doesn't count. And that sounds like, that doesn't sound like democracy.
Well, it's not democracy. And the next step in this process for us is that we send the bill that's been passed now. There was an initiative that was passed, and now we send it up to Congress for the waiting period. Now, you're talking about what our future strategy is going to be. This is part of it.
Right.
Every law we pass has to go to Congress, and it has to wait either 30 or 60 legislative days. Now, in this case, we're going to send this legislation up there, and it's going to wait 30 legislative days. And just so you know, that's not like business days. Just so people know, that's not like business days. That's actually when the legislature is in session. So right now, of course, it's going to be much more than 30 days because we're going to have the Christmas holiday, and then there's the new Congress starts on January 2nd. So, but it's going to sit up there for 30 days, and then we'll see what Congress does. Some of the feeling in the district is that maybe Congress won't move to overturn the act. And what the budget actually says, that's the first loophole. The second loophole is what the budget actually says is that we can't use any of our money to implement Initiative 71, and we cannot use any of our own money to change any law on drugs that is contrary to the federal law. So we can't make any changes using federal money. Well, there are people in the district who say The Attorney General and the Chairman of the City Council and other people have issued the opinion that we can use money that we have in our reserve, which is already ours, to right. implement the law. Because you're not talking about much money to implement the law, number one.
Right.
And number two, there's since it's been passed, since the initiative has already been passed, it's really not a new law. We're not making a new law after the budget has been passed, because the law was actually technically made before the budget was passed.
Oh.
This doesn't apply. Yeah. But you know what? You and I know that's nonsense. It's nonsense. They will find a way. To discount all that. They have complete control over the district. They have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever. So whatever maneuver we make, they will outmaneuver us, I guarantee you. And that's why I think it's time for us to stop looking for clever loopholes and solutions, ways to get around what Congress does to us. And stand up for what our rights are so that we don't have to put up with this anymore. Because we will never outmaneuver these guys. This is what these guys do. You know, they're the best at it.
I guess my question is, what did they really get out of denying D.C. the right to pass this referendum? I mean, it's not like it's stopping the other states from passing legislation that legalizes marijuana. It's not like it becomes really the big news and they become famous for this action. So is it just a spiteful kind of thing? I'm the bigger bully in the sandbox and I can kick sand in your eye because I'm bigger than you? I mean, is that what it is?
Well, I don't know exactly what it is, and that's a good question. But I think part of what it is that we're the nation's capital, right? So you get attention on your issue. And this is getting attention, and it'll get more attention. So the guy from Maryland, you know, wants to get some attention, wants to look like he's strong on this particular issue. This is an issue for him. I think he's absolutely sincere about his desire to ban marijuana from becoming legal. I think that he cares deeply about the issue. But what we're saying to him is, great, go care in Maryland. That's where you were elected.
Yeah.
So,
right.
But I think they do it because, one, well, Harris already said he's doing it because he can. He said if he could outlaw it in Washington and Colorado, he would do it, but he doesn't have the power. And part of the argument he made in the editorial today, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, is that he's doing it in Washington also because we have so many different police departments in Washington.
What?
Yes. And he says that he thinks this law would make chaos for the police because, for example, if you were smoking pot in front of the building, well, you can't do it in public, but if you were smoking pot at the Marriott Hotel across the street from my office, that under the new law would be perfectly legal. But if you walked across the street onto Freedom Plaza, which is federal land, you could be arrested because you're violating federal law. We've seen this, actually. We saw this in Washington where a bunch of kids
were arrested. Well, let me say something here. In the free marketplace, which the Republicans strongly hold as a principle to what they believe in, is having the marketplace be free to react to the needs of whatever happens. It'd be a great way to make some money and have an app that would tell you, hey, buddy, you know, you can light up here. Hey, you better put it out. You're on federal government. I mean, why? That's a ridiculous reason. I mean, it's just a good way for somebody who makes a lot of money, you know, being able to make people wear what they are.
Well,
that's not a
reason.
We
would have like people out on the street saying, okay here, not okay there. No, it is a ridiculous argument. And you know, and you could say that about many, many, many things. You could say that about many things in the District of Columbia, that there are different laws that apply depending on whether you're federal, whether you're on federal property or not. For example, you know that we have a local ordinance that allows you to put up campaign signs in the public space. It's something that you particularly like to do. I tried to give you a lot of that because I know you like climbing up on telephone poles. I wish America could see you climbing up on light poles, putting up those signs, because you really risked your life. But you can't do it on federal property. It's against the federal law. So when you drive along the mall area, you don't see any campaign signs. And it's ridiculous, right? Because there were places where there were 20 campaign signs on a light pole. You couldn't even see the light pole for all the campaign signs. So it's a good law. It's a good law. You shouldn't be able to put up "Vote for Michael Brown" in front of the Lincoln Memorial, you know, because it's a national monument. So it's a good law. But that's just one simple example of that law. In fact, Pat and I, my wife and I, to get on the ballot in the District of Columbia, you need to collect ballot signatures. And so you do it at community events and, you know, at the DMV and places like that. So we went to Carter Barron, which, you know, is a local amphitheater. Right. And they were doing Shakespeare in the Park. And we thought, well, when people come out of Shakespeare, we'll ask them for their signatures. Well, we almost got arrested because it's illegal. You can get signatures anywhere in the District of Columbia, but it's illegal to do it on federal property unless you have a permit. So they came up to us. Yeah, and since we, you know, we'd only been there for a few minutes, they made us leave. But they could have basically arrested us for not having a permit if they wanted to. And so, you know, there's a lot of these laws that already exist. And, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I'd love to see what Andy Harris's constituents would say if one of them stood up in an audience and said something about gun control to me. And I said, well, if you don't like the gun laws in Maryland, if you don't like the gun laws that we want to institute in Maryland, move to Texas or move to Alabama or to some place or to Arizona, you know, federal gun laws.
And people don't realize that residents of D.C. have been there for generations and generations, you know, kind of enduring this. It's just really not until 1964 were they even able to vote for a mayor, city council, and the president, correct? But I mean, that's what you vote for.
Well, actually, it was later than 64 for home rule, because home rule is 40 years old. It was 64 for the president. Because there was a constitutional amendment, the 23rd Amendment. But as far as home rule, this is the 40th anniversary of home rule. So that would be 1974. So it took another 10 years before we could vote for mayor. But up till then, you couldn't even vote for president. Imagine going to the Second World War, being from the District of Columbia, and going to Asia or Europe and fighting for years for democracy and coming home and not even be able to vote for president. It was crazy.
That is crazy. So your next move is to see what happens. You're kind of putting it back into their court, the ball in their court, to see what they do, correct, on this referendum.
Well, that seems to be the official position right now. My position is we ought to go up and make an issue out of this, not try to sneak it in the back door, not try to get it in sideways, because it's never going to happen. We keep on doing this, and it never seems to work. I think we need to stand up and say, look, this is our right. We want our rights. We want to be like every other American, and the only way to do that is to make the District of Columbia the 51st state. There's no other reasonable way to do it. The only other solutions are retrocession, which is something that's just too difficult and not going to work, or legislating, giving us our rights, which then can be taken away at any time. So really, the only reasonable path to equality for the people of District of Columbia is statehood. So that's what I think we should be doing. I think we should be fighting the fight instead of trying to figure out clever ways around these guys, because we're never going to outmaneuver them. They've been given the power, and they know how to use power. That's what they're all about.
Yes, they do. Well, your next hope then, I guess, is to go to the city council and hopefully they understand that there's this passion in D.C. for statehood. And hopefully, possibly what, maybe you think that they, if there's enough pressure, that they would be able to fund the offices so that you guys could lobby for statehood, which is what you were elected to do?
Well, we certainly want to try that. But of course, my backup plan, plan B, is that you're coming back to Washington and that we're going to go up there and intimidate these people, right? Look, look, we got to be honest. Didn't we do it the first time? They weren't going to let us speak at the Senate hearing.
And they didn't know
we were messing with.
I remember you said before, you said, well, you know, and they're really usually very nice. No, no, no. They were not nice to us. They said, no, you cannot. We will not let you. We will not do it. You will not speak. And we fought it and won. And through that, I think, and through the way the people voted, and they voted and they got you. Oh, we were so close to winning you a seat on city council based on the fact that people realize that you're going to be for statehood. Now we got to convince City Hall they need to fund it. And we may ask the people who listen to us on the show to help us do that.
Yeah, to call in. We will.
Yes.
And you know what? That brings us to the end of the show. So I'm going to let you have the last word. But I think that should be our strategy. You climb in that Ferrari that you're buying me for Christmas and drive on out here and we'll get it done. Thanks
All
for
right.
listening, America. Kathleen's got the last word.
Yes. Thank you, Get America. It's, I mean, pretty soon we're hitting Christmas. Wish the D.C. residents, you know, the ability to have the right to self-determination. We wish you all the best as we come to this really one of the nicest holidays and one of the greatest holidays, Christmas time. And we wish you a very, very happy Christmas and Merry Christmas and good shopping. And we'll be talking to you next Sunday.
Right, and great season, whether you celebrate Christmas, Kwanzaa, you know, no matter what you celebrate, Hanukkah. We hope you have a great season, and everybody has a happy, healthy holiday. See you
and
next week.
That's right, America. Let's all have respect for each other. Thank
yes.
you for listening.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.